Blog Talk Radio.
Playing Sports City Chefs from Amazon Music.
Yeah.
Back, listen, enjoy the vibe. Sip something, light it up, enjoy the ride. Cause the Sports City Chefs is on the night. In the kitchen cooking up, they on the rise.
Sports City Chefs, Chefs. Sports City, Sports City Chefs, Chefs. Sports City, Sports City Chefs, Chefs. Sports City, Sports City Chefs,
Chefs. Yes, Lord, we got a brand new present. Joe Biden, we riding, I pray you heaven sent. Word from the wise, my people stay ahead of me.
Come on,
I've been relevant, trying to survive the elements. It ain't no love in these streets, these dudes telling it. Case go from cold to hot, state evidence. Kaboom, Sports City Chefs is in the room. Cooking up hot topics to put up on your spoon. They well in tune, blown like a flower in June. Superman verse MF Doom, the clouds loom. So tell a friend, it's the Sports City Chefs again. Pay attention, tune in, we on the set again.
Hello, how you doing today? I hope I find y'all feeling healthy and happy on this Thursday, October 21st, as we are now deep into the League Championship Series. This is Dave here with Nate. Nate, how you doing, buddy?
What's going on, Dave? Looking forward to another night of talking baseball. We're getting towards the end here.
Yeah, it's crazy. We've got the Dodgers down 3-1 against Atlanta series-wise, but in the current baseball game tonight, Chris Taylor, as we were coming on, hit a two-run homer to put the Dodgers ahead of the I almost called them the A's, the Braves, and the Dodgers now ahead 3-2 in the second. So really early in the game, lot to go, but it's in LA, and yeah, do or die. By the way, in case anybody's wondering, if you hear anything weird on the show, Nate's expecting delivery any moment now. So that's exciting. I had to. So in the AL side of things, we've got – I'm really surprised at the way the AL side has gone, honestly. It felt like the Red Sox came into this with all the momentum in the world, but the Astros right now have the Red Sox against the ropes, and it is – you know, that's a 3-2 series right now with Houston up. And Friday's matchup – that'll be in Houston, will feature Nathan Eovaldi against Luis Garcia. I have to laugh. I just laugh there because I see Luis Garcia has a 45 ERA in the postseason, which, you know, doesn't seem great until you look at Eovaldi's 10.5 ERA. So then again, how much stock can you really put into postseason ERAs on an individual postseason basis? But, you know, the skinny of it is if the Braves win tonight and the Astros win tomorrow, we're looking at the World Series everybody was looking forward to, which would be Braves-Astros. So that's kind of where we stand right now. Nate, I kind of stole your thunder there with the whole scoreboarding. But I do understand that you're not unlike me, and I think this is true for all sports fans. And I've been paying way more attention to this postseason than I usually do once the Yankees are out. But there's always that inevitable, like a Tom Brady football, you're just deflated after your team's done, and. I don't know. I try to view everything, especially after my little fun back and forth with TP a few weeks ago. As a quick note, TP called in on our number at 929-477-2759. That's something I got to do better with Nate next year, is giving out that call-in number. But anyway, in case you do want to come and yell at me, it's 929-477-2759. You know, I try to view things through both my lenses of a sports fan, as both the Yankee fan who's always in it every year, which I think would be not dissimilar to what a Patriots fan mentality has been, always in contention. Steelers fans the same, and then there's Jets fan of me who understands. No, you know what I mean. But I'm just trying to say, You know, it's tough watching this come down. But what I'm rooting for, Nate, and I always, once my teams are out of it, even if it's a hated rival like the Red Sox, I always root for every series to go, you know, 5 or 7 games. I would love to see both of these go to classic, you know, game seven scenarios where it's tied going into the 8th inning and you get some type of drama. The one thing, Nate, and this is what you and I were talking about leading into the show before we came on, was I live, and I think everybody lives for those Bobby Thompson, Aaron Boone, even, you know, listen, it broke my heart, but I'm smart enough to understand that the Luis Gonzalez, you know, bloop over Jeter was one of the, you know, most important plays in baseball history. I mean, or the, you know, Mariano Rivera throwing it away. Or just the sheer velocity of the Red Sox comeback and how it happened and how quickly it happened, and nobody even really remembers that World Series. And you just live for these moments. You live for these game sevens with whatever storyline got you there, because over the course of 6 games, you're going to have – that's, you know, 2 full series in a regular season and then a rubber on top. So I look for the most intriguing LCSs and just that to get me to the World Series. But the one thing I would hate, you know, like I brought up that Bobby Thompson moment or the Aaron Boone moment, the one thing I would hate is for it to end on something stupid like a check swing.
Well, yeah. I'm actually a little – during your little intro there, you actually, like, reminded me of a thought that I had about this Red Sox-Astros series. For no real reason whatsoever, it harkens back to me to the 1960 World Series, and this is another one where I get to dig on you as a Yankee fan.
Wow.
The Pirates ended up winning the 1960 World Series, if you'll recall, on a walk-off home run by Bill Mazeroski in Pittsburgh.
Oh, yeah. One of the great home runs there was.
Right. But if you look back at the box scores of that series, the Yankees won every game. Like, when they won their 3 games of that series, they won them by, like, just absolutely dominant scores, just ran away with it. I think every game that the Yankees won was decided by, like, almost 8 or 9 runs. And then the Pirates won all of their games by, like, 1 or 2 runs.
One or two,
and
right.
That's really how, like, the Astros-Red Sox series has kind of played
out.
Because, like, if you look back at it, like, the Astros, they squeaked through. It took a big comeback for them to squeak by in game one. Games 2 and 3, the Red Sox did nothing but hit grand slams and decided they were just going to throw 45 runs up there or whatever the number is. And then, you know, the last 2 games, the Astros won last night fairly handily. They never really were threatened. But before that, the Red Sox, it was 2-2 going into the 8th inning before Nady Evaldi completely melted down and the Red Sox bullpen couldn't hold it in. So the score of game 4 looks a lot more out of hand than it actually was. But that's my little baseball throwback. But you wanted to talk about – you wanted to harken back to the NLDS for a minute.
Harken back.
it is a shame that a Game 5 classic series, the series that everybody wanted to watch, the Dodgers and the Giants, it is a shame that it has to end the way that it did. And – full disclosure, because of Major League Baseball's blackout rules and TBS, TNT not wanting to share their streaming services with the MLB TV app and MLB TV subscription payers like myself, I have not been able to watch the NL series. I've been able to watch the American League playoff series. But I have read on and I've watched back the highlights of everything that's happened in most of these NL series. And yeah, the Giants-Dodgers, the series everybody wants to see, ends Game 5, the 27th out, gets called on a check swing called Third Strike. And as you laid out, it's probably the most anticlimactic way you can possibly end a series. And now you have a bunch of people that are asking, should we be reviewing check swings? And my response is no, I don't think we should. Dave, what is your opinion?
So, all right, I think yes. And I think everything should be reviewable, but I also want to be clear, I am not endorsing a system here where everything gets reviewed. I think everything should be in play to be reviewed. I don't want to fall into a trap where I say, I don't know the best way to do it. Maybe heck, we'll come up with it together on the show. But I think, you know, you should be able to argue or challenge, if you want to argue a ball and a strike that badly, then you know what? Go for it. But there has to be some consequence for not getting it. I kind of like starting with the baseline of what, you know, football does, pro football does, where you have three challenges. You know, I think it would be out of, you know, I like to start with what's too much, right? Where you're saying, okay, one challenge for an inning, that's ridiculous, that's too much, right? What could your challenge be,
right,
to? Like, would you just want to make it a broad thing? Would you want it to be a check swing or, you know, was it a strike or not? I mean, I think if you're going to allow challenges in the way that I'm thinking about it, you have to allow and put it on the manager. I mean, this is kind of a fun thing to maybe put the power back in the manager's hands, because that's something we've harped on all season, is how managers are just figureheads, but make this a decision literally only they can make. Actually, as I'm thinking about it, that almost makes me want to do this more, but, you know, let's just say you get, you know, one challenge every three innings, so I guess that would be three, right? If you want a challenge, did he go around? Fine, but you get a limited amount of them. If you want a challenge, was it a strike or a ball? Fine, but you only get a limited amount. I mean, I don't know, does it, if you lose a challenge, you know, put a strike on the hitter or a ball on the hitter or something like that, but I think I kind of almost challenge you to tell me something that you think that shouldn't be challengeable, given part of the idea is making it so you don't have all these stupid back and forths about things, and you, in a way, use this to make the game faster or with a better pace. Like, I think there's a way you can do both.
So here's my thing with the challenge. So let's use your example of the challenging balls and strikes. We would be relying on camera angles to do this, because unless we put the technology into every stadium where we can basically just call balls and strikes electronically anyway, which, you know what, I'm kind of coming around to the idea of maybe we just have that. I still support the idea of umpires. I still like the human umpires over robots. I don't want robots necessarily calling the game. I have no reason why, but I do like the human element of the sport, and I'll continue to prefer that over any electronic version of an umpire. However, if we're going to go to the position of putting that technology in, fine, whatever. But until you have some kind of technology that you can rely on to get the balls and strikes correct, you're going to be relying on the in-stadium cameras. Now, we all, you know, you sit down and you watch these games and you're like, oh my God, this umpire, he's terrible. You can see how clear these balls and strikes are. And then, you know, they pull it up on that little, you know, they'll pull up the digitally enhanced 3D version. But that's not accurate.
So,
it's just not because you're
– go ahead.
I think you're saying it's not accurate, but it's because it's a system that hasn't been developed yet. It's like saying, all right, I'm going to come up with something really silly here, but it's like, all right, seatbelts are important, but if somebody said the seatbelt system is a piece of duct tape to your chair, and you're like, well, that doesn't make any sense. It's like, well, yeah, okay, but nobody spent the time to really develop something like a seatbelt. So if you – and again, this is a lazy example – but if you had something like, I don't know, like a chip in the baseball is the obvious answer, right? And that's being ridiculously dramatic, but just go with me here. But say you have, you know, some way to chip the baseball and some laser that could figure out where the player's, you know, shoulders, knees, and the name across the jersey are. And you could, you know, effectively programmatically draw a box, not unlike you have in and I'm going to go back, like MLB The Show, right, the video game that we've talked about on air a few times. You know, that's able to be adjusted based on the player. How? Because there's pre-programmed heights and weights and batting stances in there. I mean, look, the technology is actually there in the game, right? You just kind of use something like that as a baseline with the understanding, no, it's not going to be perfect, but that's why you have some of the minor league things where you can try it out. I would be open to, you know, how cool would it be, by the way, one day if it was like a hologram? I'm getting a little Star Wars-y here, but if it was like an actual hologram in front of the player, and once the ball like went through it, you know, then you'd clearly see what's a strike and what's not. I think that wouldn't be the spirit of the game, but I'm just saying, like, from a fan standpoint, if that was like something you could see when you're in the stands, but the players couldn't. I guess my point is you can mathematically draw that with a computer, the strike zone I'm talking about. So I guess I don't see where, if you can do that, if you can assure some consistency, I think that would be a great first step to being able to make everything challengeable and standardized almost. Although again, I get to that there's the angle that takes away from the kind of the specialness of the game, you know, as I talk about in soccer, like the, you know, the beautiful game, and that takes away whatever that is in baseball. But I think at this point, people are so frustrated with what's right and what's wrong. And I forget who said it, Nate, but somebody once told me that one of the main reasons soccer is never going to be the most popular sport in America is because of, for example, one of the little things is how extra time works. Is, you know, just the way people, I think, function in this country is, you know, the clock hits zero, it's over, man. I don't need this subjective, well, maybe it's 3 minutes, maybe it's 4 minutes. Even if it's a good system, which I don't hate it, but it just doesn't seem like something that's gonna capture everybody. And that's so I'm using that as part of my backdrop, and you have to give some extremely finite, stringent, this is the strike zone, it's a strike or it's not. And I think right now umpires are frustrating people more and more because there's no real rhyme or reason to it. It just seems like it's willy-nilly and it could change day to day.
Well, yeah, but here's the thing. Like when I look at the strike zone, I don't really mind all that much if it changes from time to time. Basically, all I want is that I want the umpire to be consistent in game. So like if you're calling the outside corner, if the ball is like 2 inches off the plate, but you're calling that a strike, call that a strike all game. I don't care if, like, by the strictest definition of the strike zone, that's outside. Fine. The players need to know, hey, this is a strike today because this is how, like, this particular umpire calls a very pitcher-friendly strike zone. I have no problem with that as long as it's consistent, like, throughout the game. Not these guys are like, oh, well, you know, sometimes it's a strike, other times it's not. I don't really care. Now, that is a sign to me of a lazy umpire. But where I'm going with getting back to the original thing about whether or not we should make balls and strikes reviewable, part of the problem with that is that, you know, we're looking at it, we're looking at it on TV and we're thinking, well, this should be obvious, this should be easy enough to do, but it's not necessarily true because we're looking at it from 90% of the time, we're looking at it from a center field camera that's not actually dead on center field. We're looking, it's off to the side, and you have that little superimposed box that is not a dynamic box from hitter to hitter. It actually just stays static. So you have the same box, whether it's Aaron Judge or Jose Altuve up at the plate. So it, like, we're lulling the fans and we're lulling the baseball consumer into this false sense of like, oh, this is what the strike zone is. That's not what the strike zone is. They just throw up this magic box as if that's supposed to be what it is, but that's not how it's defined. It's defined from player to player to allow each player its individual strike zone that they can hit.
You can adjust that on the fly, though. If you're going to do it, right, if you're going to implement this, you're going to have to implement it right. And I think
do you have any faith in baseball implementing it right?
Don't let baseball do it.
Right. Well, like, we're asking baseball to get it right. Baseball never gets it right when they try to. Heck, they brought out the DH in the 1970s. It was supposed to be an experimental thing. And we're like, you know what? Here we are, 30, 40 years later. We still have a DH, but only in one league because we can't get that right.
Listen, Nate, a lot of things were experimental in the 70s that are still around, but that's neither here nor there. So your Judge Altuve example, I want to go back to that. So you have to – if you – it's insane to think that, you know, a guy like Aaron Judge or Altuve would have the same strike zone. So part of the little robot umpire system would have to take that into account. If I told you that it could take that into account, and more importantly, it would know – I'm thinking of a guy – do you remember Mo Vaughn's, like, weird-as-hell batting stance where he was, like, hunched over?
Yep.
Okay. So I'm thinking of him, and then I'm also thinking, I think it was Craig Counsell, who, like, stood straight up. I always thought of him as, like, he did the pencil dive everybody would do as a kid.
Yeah, and then you also had Cal Ripken, who had about 9 different batting stances throughout his career.
Right. And part of this is, like, if you – again, this is not a great example, but I do think it is an example, is if you put, you know, a chip in – you know, in the jersey that can tell where the player is, and as they move, like, you know, Derek Jeter was a master at when the ball was coming in. If it was a low pitch, he would almost like start to like kneel down or lean over when the ball was coming in, and it would change the eye level of the umpire. And he wouldn't talk about it until after he retired, because he's like, oh, I'm not going to give away my secrets. But he would talk about it, and he'd say that, you know, that was literally the point. He said he would learn the umpire's tendencies, and he would sort of take advantage of it. And I love that he did that. And I think that's gamesmanship. That's not, like, cheating or anything like that. I think if you can do it, then go for it. But I'd love to see, you know, I think David Ortiz did that somewhat too, not quite on the level of Jeter. And you're taking some of that out of the game.
Just start walking to first base.
Yeah, that's true. You're right. Oh my, I love when guys would do that. Show up the umpires, but you know, I guess I think part of this, Nate, is you have to take into account how much people have completely lost faith in the umpiring. In politics, there's always confidence in our politicians, which not get into that right now, but if you were to take a poll of confidence in Major League Baseball umpires, and furthermore, I mean, what's a sport right now that doesn't have officiating criticized? And part of it is, I think, you know, going back to what I was saying earlier, we love our HD. I love HD and HDR and all these crazy different, you know, hot, incredible pictures. But, you know, what I can see very, very clearly now is, in, you know, going to football, for an example, is was the foot in bounds? Or in baseball, as we just saw, was it a check swing? I'm telling you, if it's 1997 and, you know, Bobby Cox is out there managing, and I don't know if we'd be able to tell, maybe that call we'd be able to tell wasn't a check swing, but there's some that are close that you just couldn't tell, but now you certainly can, and that is inherently putting the rule enforcers in all sports under much more scrutiny. And then layered on top of that is social media, where everybody can immediately go yell about it. So I think you have to take as much out of the officiating's hands that can be handled by technology, because you can. And it sucks. And I think that I do think it sucks, because you're taking away something, a part of the – if it was still 1950 and we didn't have the ability to scrutinize and do super slow-mos and do, you know, frame-by-frames and things like that, then it wouldn't matter. But we can, and people are absolutely going to be upset when you see something not go their way. And you should be. You have every right to be. Why wouldn't you get upset if a call goes against you in that case? If you're the Giants, why wouldn't you kick and scream and say, this is ridiculous? Sure, there's a lot of other calls, and a lot of people were pointing to a game earlier in the season where a similar situation happened and a check swing was called that should not have been called. But that's the point, is now everybody's going to keep saying, oh, well, it's a makeup call. I hate it. I just get it right. Find some way to use the technology, get it right. But take the umpires and make sure that they have some type of use, just like the managers. You know, give them the challenging.
Now, I agree with you that umpires are under immense scrutiny, and there's a lot of people that lose a lot of faith in them. But people have lost faith in umpires because all we do is we highlight their mistakes. So everybody thinks that they're getting everything wrong all the time. In reality, umpires get forget what the number is, but they actually there was a survey conducted earlier this season about they went back and they reviewed all umpire calls for an entire baseball season, and the umpires were correct something like 97% of the time. So let's make sure that we get technology to get that other 2.7% or whatever it is. And I get your position. If we can get to 100, why not get to 100? I understand that. But the idea that we need to correct, that there's this overriding problem with umpiring or officiating, I think that's wrong. It's not as prevalent as people think it is. We just get these high-profile instances that people want to overreact to. So going back to the check swing that started off this whole debate, the reason why I have no major issues with how that played out is because the umpiring crew handled it exactly the way they're supposed to. It was a pitch. The guy started moving his bat. Instead, what would have really irked me is if the home plate umpire called the swing without checking with first base. But that's not what he did. He checked to first base to the guy that had the better angle, and that guy made the call. Now, did he get the call right or wrong? Probably got it wrong. But you know what? I don't really care. They did it the way they were supposed to do it. If that would have been...
But you guys, wait. I got to stop you right there. I have to stop you. I would not be doing my job if I didn't stop you. You said you just very easily threw away that you don't care. That's the problem, though, Nate, is I know you don't care, but more and more and more people do care, and that's the problem, is a lot of – over time, it's shifting from I don't care. It's fine. It happens every so often. And just the more time goes on, the more people are going to flip from – Nate, you're not going to see the number of people who don't care increase. You're going to see the number of people who care increase.
And that's fine. But here's the thing. We're basically saying that we need to now be able to review check swings simply because it was the 27th out of the NLDS between the Giants and the Dodgers, and it happened on national TV. That exact same play happens, or that exact same situation happens thousands of times throughout the season where it's strike two on a batter in the middle of the third inning between the Twins and the Orioles in the middle of August. Big deal. As long as you go through the procedure.
No, see, I do think it's a big deal.
I really don't. I think we're just...
I think it's a very big deal.
I think the size of the moment makes it out to be a bigger deal than it actually is.
No. I think it's a... Then people must not be... I understand... You're trying to say, oh, well, it's just a, you know, it's like going back to football here, the Saints defensive pass interference situation a couple of years ago where there was an obvious defensive pass interference and it wasn't called and the Saints were out of the playoffs. Football changed the rule to you can now challenge defensive pass interference. And it was absolutely an overreaction to one individual play. You'll see things like, Terrell Owens once got dragged down by the back of the neck, and now horse collar tackles aren't a thing. That's sports, man. It happens where rules get made because of a specific high-profile incident. Now, I'm not I need you, like, trust me on this one. The only reason we're talking about it right now is because of the occurrence at the end of the Giants-Dodgers game. Now, if at the end of the Giants-Dodgers game there was a curveball that was very clearly a ball, but it was called a strike, and that's how the game ended, then I guarantee you I would be having the exact same conversation with you about how robot umpires are essential, except with a lot more vigor. And, you know, we could even then just be like, yeah, and, you know, also as a sidebar, check swings. Right now the headline is check swings, but the core of all this is the same, and that's getting it right. So I don't agree. I think if it's, you know, June 29th and it's the third inning and a guy check swings, if it's the second strike. See, that's my point. Actually, this is exactly my point, is if it's June 29th and it's the third inning and it's the second strike and you're a manager and for whatever reason you feel the urge to use one of your little challenges on that, then go for it. Feel empowered to do that. I think that's the spot to use it. And that's why I am fully in support of a challenge, whatever the hell you want kind of philosophy. Because then, you know what, if you have a rule like that in place, then you know what, nobody can complain about it again either. Because you're putting the onus on the manager, and they have complete autonomous control over what they challenge and what they don't, and when they do challenge and when they don't.
I don't like this idea. I don't like this proposal because I know that there are managers out there that are going to abuse that privilege, and they're going to end up making games unwatchable. In fact, we don't even need to speculate on whether or not that will happen. It did happen. I got to look up the name right now.
When they first brought... But so you're assuming, and I get it. You're assuming that I'm creating some wild west of challenges. I'm saying you have to limit it, and you have to sit.
Okay. Well, would you allow then for the umpires to initiate their own reviews as well?
Absolutely not. No way.
If we're going to allow managers even a limited amount, like the three, like that, then the next time, if they come out across that line a fourth time, they need to be tossed, and there can't be any instance where Major League Baseball is allowed to initiate their own review. I'd rather it be where Major League Baseball can initiate their own review from the, like, give your managers one challenge a game, and you have to use it before the seventh inning. Anything after the seventh inning has to come down from Major League Baseball because they saw something egregious. Now, if you want to decide that that's an egregious way to end the game, fine, go ahead, look at it. I think that, this is us getting all worked up over a check swing when the Giants were down by a run, so they needed the guy to not only get on, but they needed somebody to drive him in. If he's I really don't think that there's that much, like, yeah, it, we get to say that ended the game and it's a crappy way to end the game, but is it really... Nobody can really say with any confidence that that's the reason why the Giants lost the game. They were losing the game. They were down to their last strike. A bad call on the last strike is not the reason they lost that game. Giving them that strike back, is there a chance that he then hits the next ball out? Yes, there's a chance. Is it likely? No. And now we want to, like, we have people talking about changing the rules for the remote possibility that something could have happened differently. Like, that's true of anything. But
if I'm not mistaken, he was 0-17 against the pitcher. There was next to no chance anything was gonna happen there. So I support that. But Nate, right. I don't want you to get pigeonholed into thinking that I'm specifically making this about the check swing thing. If anything, I'm trying to take a step back and say this is why we need to change, you know, the whole system. Because these things happen, and quote unquote, this happens, or that's, you know, this is as John Sterling would say, that's baseball, Susan. You know, that's not good enough. You can do better. I don't know why we're accepting that that was acceptable. The sport needs to change. I understand that I'm using that one specific example as a jumping off point. But, Nate, it could have been anything as a jumping off point. It could have been a low curveball call to strike. It could have been Andres Galarraga, Jim Joyce situation, which I think that was another super high profile example where Andres Galarraga lost the perfect game on an obvious blown call by Jim Joyce. And we've talked about it earlier in the season. I think we both admire how Jim Joyce handled the whole thing by apologizing. You know, he went over to the guy's locker room after the game and apologized, genuine remorse. I get it. Cool. That's adorable. I don't care. We need to get it right, again, because we can, because we have millions of people looking at it, and we can all make the right call watching it slowed down 20 times. And one thing you'll always hear announcers and whatnot say, oh, well, the referees don't have the benefit of watching it slowed down 40 times. Yes, they do. It's garbage. That's a bad example. We have the technology. Literally, there are, if a stadium's got 50,000 people in it, I guarantee you there's at least 45,000 cell phones, and everybody in there can watch the same thing, and, you know, each of them can, you know, there's probably like 10 different angles that are being watched around the stands as it's happening. So it's just, it does not seem to me like we should be accepting of, oh, that's something that happens, and we're only getting worked up because it happened in such a high-profile spot. It doesn't matter to me if that were to happen in the third inning of a June game.
I just think that this is, for everything that baseball's trying to do to speed up the game, even with the your proposal of doing it in a doing very limited, like you get one or you get three, if we're going to move into an area of unlimited, like not unlimited, but if we're going to move into the area of everything can be reviewed, I want that to be in the hands of Major League Baseball to be watching it and Major League Baseball to radio down and be like, hey, take another look at that. That's kind of how soccer is going.
I think you had a really, really good idea that I didn't think of, which was the eye in the sky kind of referee. I think, though, part of what I was trying to do, just as an ancillary benefit of managers largely seeming like they don't matter in the sport anymore, how about innings 1 through 6? You know, you get 2 challenges. That's it. 2 challenges on whatever the hell you want. And then after that, we go with your eye in the sky. So, yes, they always have the eye in the sky available. It's just not being used innings 1 through 6. And, yeah, I get that there would then be the argument of, he's already there. Why would you risk not getting the call right in, you know, innings 1 through 6 but 7, 8, 9, you really need it. Well, okay, that's because we're trying to meet halfway. That's literally compromise. And I don't hate that. What do you think of that?
I think it's okay, except that I just keep coming back. There's one guy that sticks in my mind the more and more we talk about allowing for additional replays or additional challenges, and that's John Gibbons.
No, you're going to have way less. See, that's the thing, too, is you're gonna have way less of these, like, you know, discussions and slowdowns in the game. You're strictly playing baseball, except for potentially 2 times. I guess 4 times because it'd be 2 per manager in the whole first 6 innings. That's it. Right now, now tell me if you think I'm wrong, but I feel like we have way more than that right now.
I would have to go back and look at what the rules, because they changed. Major League Baseball changed the rules a couple of years ago, and I forget exactly what they changed them to. But I don't know that we actually had that many reviews and that many challenges going on right now.
I could be wrong.
But I keep coming back to John Gibbons because John Gibbons drove me nuts. I hated watching Blue Jays games when he was their manager, because at the time, I remember, a manager, you got one review. If you were successful in the review, I think you would get it back, but you had to use all of your reviews for the 7th inning. But at any point, you could ask the umpire and crew to review something on their own accord instead of using your challenge. And I swear there were games where Gibbons for the Blue Jays came out and he crossed that line 9 times to ask the crew to review it on their own instead of using his challenge. But he he flirted with that line and he absolutely abused it. I just think, like, this proposal, if we give managers more room and more authority to challenge more calls, we're going to have guys that are going to flirt with that line, and I think it's going to end up having the unintended consequence of slowing things down. It's going to encourage guys like
Gibbons to keep
doing what they did.
But you have to hold the managers to it, though. With your example, like, once you've made your second challenge, if you want to argue something that vehemently in the third, then you got to be willing to get thrown out of the game. Or, this is a terrible idea. I already hate it, but it's just fun to say out loud. But, like, if you really want to challenge something for a third time, be willing to risk an out or something. I don't know. I hate it. I think just stick to two. That's terrible. You'd slow the game down too much. Make it – you get two challenges, and if you're unhappy with that, you're thrown out of the game.
I suppose – I don't know. I kind of like the replay rule where it's at right now. I like the idea that, you know, if we're going to slow things down to frame by frame and then overturn something, like, when it's impossible to make that call in live action, I'm not a fan of when those things get overturned. Like, you can't convince me that it's beyond oh, what's the phrase they use for it? Convincing
insane
video evidence. Well, no. You're not going to convince me that it's actually video evidence that the call was irrefutable. Yeah, you're not going to convince me that it's irrefutable video evidence that the call was wrong when you have to literally break it down to a frame-by-frame freeze frame of a play to figure out if there was a blade of grass between the player's foot and the sideline. That's not irrefutable video evidence in my mind. Like, irrefutable video evidence.
See,
is,
that's the problem.
Oh,
see, but
I
that's
thought
the
his
problem,
foot came
Nate.
Down,
that's
was actually on one.
That's the problem, though. Is unfortunately, if you can see the blade of grass, it matters now. Like, 10 years ago, maybe it didn't matter, but it just does. It just does. And you kind of have to accept that it matters now, and it's going to matter more and more and more as technology gets better until, you know, they're going to have some system where they shoot, you know, going back to holograms, you'll be able to just watch the hologram live in your living room, and you'll be able to, like, literally walk around the guy's foot and be like, oh, yeah, I can clearly see it. You know what I mean? And that's the way things are going to go.
I don't think we need to accept that, though. Like, we are
why
humans.
Not?
We are not capable, because we're humans. We're not capable of that. Like, we're putting
demand
on people.
You're viewing the sport like if this was a bunch of kids out there playing in the playing in a lot or even college or something where it's not professional, then sure, great. I'd be willing to accept a scenario where you're not going to get every call. But when it comes professional, when it comes to things where you have, you have your antitrust laws in play, you have gambling in play now, tax exemptions, I'm taking all of this into account, right? Baseball is not a sport for fun. Baseball, football, basketball, they're not fun. The point is to go out there and win the game. I hate that they're sometimes even called games because they're not really games, they're competitions. It's a game maybe in college. It's a game maybe in peewees or whatever. But this is professionals where, you know, you have to live and die with the blade of grass, with the, you know, you for slowing it down to a hundredth of a frame to make sure that the guy, you know, the ball hit the guy's glove before the toe hit the first base bag on a swing. You have to get as granular as possible. And if you need to try to get even more granular than as granular as possible by building technologies to allow you to get even more granular.
Because, well, you point out that we're talking about professionals here, and there are livelihoods and careers on the line. We're also talking about professional officials, but for some reason we want the officials to be held to a higher degree of perfection than we hold the actual athletes. The Major League Baseball hitters, the best of them go out there and it's acceptable for them to fail 66 to 70% of the time, but the Major League umpire needs to be correct to the millimeter on the strike zone? That's no. These guys are salaried just like every one of the players.
That's why
there's
we need
no
to get
reason
the,
we
that's
should
why
be
we need to get the calls away. That's why we need to get the calls away from umpires, because they're not going to be good enough. They're never going to be good enough.
No, if we're going to say that it's acceptable for a player to fail 70% of the time, but we want I can't no.
I can't
I hate
accept
being
anything
on the side of defending.
I don't know.
If you
I,
can't
what's
accept
the point
anything
of playing the game if you're going to
your,
accept?
If,
what's
if,
the point
if
of playing the game if you're willing to accept
out of the
that?
Umpire,
which I can't.
Then we can't accept anything but 1,000 batting average from any major league player.
Well,
you
listen,
can't accept anything but
the,
a zero
the point
ERA
of the
major league pitcher.
First off, you should expect to go up there every single time at bat and put the bat on the ball and put it in play and you know hope that it doesn't hurt your batting average. Every single pitch should be a start with the in mind of getting an out. I think absolutely you should expect every player on each guy. You should expect, not expect, I'm sorry, you should hope that everybody on the roster bats 1,000. Obviously you should hope that, right? Like, if you don't think that, then I don't want you on my team. Now, realistically, what you're talking about, what the players have to do are completely different things, because let's go with surgeons, right? I think a surgeon, you would want to have a really high success rate. We both know that surgeons aren't going to have a perfectly high success rate. Now, this is an argument on your side, so I trust me, I understand that. And you're going to say, okay, listen, you're going to expect a heart surgeon to have a 1,000 batting average and a major league umpire to, you know, do better than a surgeon when you know the greatest, you know, heart surgeon in the world isn't going to be 1,000%. I understand that, Nate. But that's why when you can replace the umpires with computers and get it you want to inch closer to that 100%. I'm not going to assume – I think expect is the wrong word that I used at the top. I'm not going to expect it to be 100%, but what I want to do is do everything to close that gap, even if they have a 95% success rate and you can get it to 95.6 by replacing them with computers, do it. But not at the expense of the pace of the game. I wanted you to understand, Nate, that's my number one thing, like above getting it right, even more than getting it right, is I do not put any of these things on the table or wouldn't even entertain them as conversations if I thought it would slow the game down, because that's the number one thing the game needs more than anything is to keep shit going, right? It's just getting it's getting to a point where you're just not trying to capture the young audience who is, you know, as every year goes by, the attention span gets lower and lower because our phones and our lives can do a lot more as we move. So as we're more mobile. So that is a very important backdrop. And if the idea of two challenges per side prior to the sixth inning is too much, then fine, cut it down to one. I'm down for like finding a way to decrease it. Or, you know, you get one challenge, you know, if you, I don't like a red card system, but like if you blow your two challenges, you get like a red card and you can't challenge the next game or something like that. Actually, that'd be kind of fun, but.
Lose your DH.
You know, yeah. Oh my God. That'd be hilarious. Especially as a Yankee fan, you'd have to have like, you know, a bunch of people who don't you'd have like Luis Severino, you know, batting. Oh God. But you know, I think you're accepting, and we're just going to have to agree to disagree. If you can get 100% success rate on literally everything, or you can strive for it, and it will take technologies to get us there, then I think you're not doing your sport a service, and really your fans a service for it. Yeah, you're hurting the umpires, I guess. I don't know who it's really even hurting.
I want to be clear that I'm not opposed to the use of technology to improve the sport. I understand that my position might be coming off as being anti-improvement or anti-technology, and I'm not. If we can develop it so that it works, I'm not, like right now, like if we instituted these things tomorrow, I'm not sold that we actually have the ability to reliably do that tomorrow. I think there's a lot more involved with it than we're thinking would have to go into it right now. Like, you know, we have all the talking heads in the world, ourselves included, can come up with these hey, this is a wonderful idea. We should just do it. But there's always stuff beyond that we don't even know about to consider.
Do you know off the top of your head what the because you're a very worldly person, what the system is called? I think it's called the VAR system, and I think they use it in both soccer and tennis, or one or the other.
So soccer is called VAR, video assisted referee.
Why? I think that would actually be a better thing for, you know, like, did the football cross the goal line? But, you know, you're right. You kind of got me on that one where you like to think that if the technology existed, they'd do it. But I don't know if baseball would at this point. Let me put it this way. If they could implement it perfectly right now, because Rob Manfred's at the top, I don't think they would. And maybe that's one of the things that worries me, is the answer might be out there, but because Manfred's running the show, we're probably not going to see it.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing to consider is, like, we've thrown it out there a couple of times, like, put a chip in the baseball. That's going, like, whether we realize it or not, that's actually going to impact the flight of the ball ever so minutely. It's going to have unintended
consequences. Oh, I'm sure. No, it's a terrible
example. I actually had a similar thought, like, when it comes to football, because I had a thought where, like, let's put a chip in either end of the nose of the football or
right.
some
oh,
kind
I think
of
everybody's
thing
had that,
that
thought, yeah.
But it's linked to, you then put in, like, a light system around the field. And whenever the nose of the football crosses the line, specifically the plane of the goal line, the entire end zone is going to light up. So you're going to know, hey, the football has broken the plane one way or another.
Sort of like how hockey has the goal light in a way.
Yeah, although I believe the goal light still has to be operated by somebody.
Right, it's
being,
but it's your booth, but. You're automating it in a way. It's basically
right.
letting Alexa kind of, you know, Alexa, did the ball cross the end zone? I love that, and I do think there has to be some way to do it with baseball. I mean, the other thing that's interesting about baseball, and I'd really need to go look. And this is kind of a weird thought that I'm only having because I'm staring at the Dodger game, which, by the way, folks, in case anybody's actually listening to this live instead of watching football or the baseball game, it is 4-2. Dodgers still ahead. We are in the bottom. We are in the top of the fifth, by the way. And hopefully the Dodgers can win the next two and get us to a game seven and have some drama there. but, you know, it's a white ball over a green field with dirt, and I don't think anybody has a white outfield that I can think of. I guess the ceiling in Tampa would be difficult, but there has to be some way you can almost use, like, one of those golf trackers, you know, which there's so much precision technology available. I mean, it's, you know, we can put William Shatner into actual space. We can figure out how to tell if the damn ball is a strike or not. You know what I mean? It's frustrating because, yes, you're right. You know, where is the technology coming from? But, I mean, with what we can do in the world today, and the amount of money that baseball has tied into itself. Oh, ball was hit on a rope, but right to the left fielder. It just seems to me like they're not to steal the movie, the line from the $6 million man. We have the technology to do it. Why don't we just do it? But anyway, Nate, I know we're coming up to the close, and I want to give us a little bit more time than we usually do at the end. What are your, you know, it was a spirited debate about a game that happened a week ago. But let's take a quick look at the go forward. You know, how do you see these LCSs playing out, and what do you see as the World Series matchup? Do you think Atlanta and Houston hold on?
I hope so. I view Atlanta as, out of the four teams left, Atlanta is the least objectionable, in my opinion. Unless you're a diehard fan of somebody in the NL East, I can't really think there's any reason for anybody to dislike Atlanta all that much. I'm sure somebody could call in and tell me why Atlanta's the worst franchise to ever exist. But, you know, everybody else has their everybody else that's watching the postseason has their thing about why I can't stand them. Houston has, you know, their cheating scandal of 2016, 2017, 2018, 2019, like of that whole era. Boston is Boston. They're a divisional rival. They also have Alex. They also have Alex Cora, who did the who basically took the cheating thing that he implemented in Houston and brought it to Boston for their World Series. And for some reason, they got to just walk over that, and he only had to miss like a year and then come right back again. Also, the like lovable loser curse Boston thing, yeah, that's done, dusted, put to bed. You don't get to ride on that anymore. No, you're just as bad as every other AL East rival in my mind. And then the Dodgers are the Yankees of the West Coast. They're just not as successful at buying their championships, which is why they only have one in the last 50-some years instead of 27 in the last in their entire career or their entire existence. So, like, putting the four of them up together, yeah, I want to see Atlanta take down the big money Dodgers. I want to see Houston take care of the Red Sox, because I'm just at the beginning of the season I said I wasn't impressed with the Red Sox. I really didn't have them as a playoff team. I thought that they were going to be middling third, possibly fourth place in the AL East, because they weren't going to be able to pitch. Annoyingly, they found just enough pitching. Which brings me around to, you mentioned Nate Eovaldi is pitching tomorrow night, and I don't like that guy as a pitcher. I think it's because I had him on the fantasy baseball rosters way back when I still played, because he could throw 100 miles an hour, but he was a 100-mile-an-hour pitcher who couldn't strike anybody out, and now somehow in the last 2 years he's put it together and figured out how to strike people out. But he's a pitcher that I've never really liked. And it kills me that he's now the guy that the Red Sox are riding to success. Nails on a chalkboard. I can't stand it. I want to see him out. Get him out. I want Houston to knock him out.
Yeah, I'm getting really confused to all the Yankee fans on Twitter who are pulling for the Red Sox. It's uncomfortable. It just feels wrong. But I guess if you're of a certain age, and the Yankee fans on Twitter are definitely the younger group, I just don't understand how you could root for the Red Sox. That does remind me, I have to correct one absolutely egregious mistake I made a few weeks ago. Maybe it was last week. I don't know. I have no sense of time anymore. I had said I was kind of rooting for the Dodgers last week because my dad was a Dodgers fan. And honestly, Nate, you ever just have one of those things where you blank so hard that you just think you remember the opposite of the truth? I mean, I'm married, and yep. I can confidently say there have been times where I've remembered the absolute opposite. It's like, why'd you leave the fridge open? It's like, well, I thought you told me to open it. It's like, no, I told you to make sure it was closed. That kind of thing. Just complete, you know, just a complete 180. Well, I did that, yep. And I forgot. I just completely blanked, and it worked for the narrative of our show, but my dad actually was a huge Giants fan growing up, and his favorite player of all time. Yeah, oh, trust me, he called me after the show, and texted me, and he said, I'm really disappointed in you. Well, he didn't say he was disappointed. He was disappointed in the mistake, but I had to make sure I got out there and corrected that one, that, yes, Willie Mays was his favorite guy growing up, and I've been endlessly embarrassed about that. I had to make sure I made that correction on air. So sorry that you got the short end of the stick there. But, hey, listen, Nate, you give me a quick sentence to play it out. I'll play it out, and then we'll see y'all next week.
Another great night, another good show. Check us out on the website. All the other shows going on, great stuff, sportscitychefs.com. I keep promising college football material. I promise I'm going to get some more up. I just need something to rant about. Maybe it'll be SEC officiating, whether or not Tennessee is going to throw more garbage on their field next week. But, yeah.
Hey,
hockey,
you know how to
NBA,
fix that?
NFL.
I was going to say, fix that.
Oh,
SEC,
yeah,
officiating with computers, Nate.
Yeah, well, you know. It might work. But, yeah, check us out on the website. You got college football, NFL, hockey, Major League Baseball, championships coming down. Everything good is going on in the world of sports right now. Check us out, sportscitychefs.com, and we'll see you back here next week.
Nate said it all for me. So I've said enough for a lifetime, and for the last time, I wish you all a pleasant good evening. Sports City, Sports City.
City. Chefs, chefs, Sports City, Sports City. Chefs, chefs, Sports City, Sports City. Chefs, chefs, Sports City, Sports City. Kaboom, Sports City chefs is in the room, cooking up hot topics to put up on your spoon. They well in tune, bloom like a flower in June. Superman vs. MF Doom, the clouds loom. So tell a friend, it's the Sports City chefs again. Pay attention, tune in, we on the set again. Sports City, Sports City, chef, chef. Sports City, Sports City, chef, chef. Yeah. Cabin. Taj.
Woo! Connecticut.